This is Matt Wells at UN News. Well, the Black Lives Matter movement that's sweeping the world has its origins in the transatlantic slave trade of the 16th century, and new impetus today to honour and preserve the resting places of those who were enslaved and their descendants. Peggy King Yorda was working as a designer in the New York City mayor's office when she heard that a building slated for construction was due to be built on top of an African-American burial ground in Lower Manhattan. Coming from a family steeped in the civil rights movement, she swung into action to preserve the site, becoming heavily involved in saving others across the world, including one on the remote island of St. Helena, midway between Africa and the Americas. Ms. Yorda spoke to Liz Scafidi about her work and the importance of the island to her own family history.
Though I was not born on St. Helena, I claim St. Helena and those who were buried there and those who were enslaved there, even before this burial ground was even in place, that it is a place that my ancestors may have stopped or have some relationship with. We are the descendants. I am a descendant of enslaved people, and I am just as passionate about it as the saints are.
Where is St. Helena Island?
St. Helena is about equidistant between Brazil and South Africa. It's in the South Atlantic. Before the airport was open, the way to get to St. Helena was by British mail boat, and they also had berths in that boat that you could buy tickets for. And it would take about 6 days by boat from Cape Town to get to the island.
What was your role in the project?
I was contacted by two young British filmmakers who were already on island, and they were there for some other purpose of doing some filming. And as a result, when they were doing some of the work related to the airport, the buzz that started about these remains having been unearthed in 2008 really caught their attention. So they started doing research. And of course, because of the work that I did on the African burial ground in New York, they contacted me. And over the course of a year, write to me about some of the challenges and about the ground and what was it? Could I share some insights? My research about the island was kind of limited. At some point, after about a year, I was flown in to take a look because there were a lot of questions that I had, recommendations that I made, primarily because of the work that I had done with the African burial ground. I felt that I could bring insights and be of value to any kind of early concerns that people on the ground had regarding a project like this.
Were there any ethical questions surrounding disturbing the sacred ground?
Yeah, there seemed to be some fear about the ground being desecrated, not being protected. It wasn't really clear where the community was about preserving it and what their relationship was to the historic site. So once I got to the island and I was able to visit there for a period of a week, I really understood the significance of its location and its unique importance to the transatlantic slave trade.
How were the burial grounds discovered?
Well, it wasn't unearthed accidentally. There are historical records that show that there's been other development that has to do with the facilities on the island, that on certain occasions they unearth remains. But there probably wasn't the same kind of interest and focus at the time that would stop that kind of construction. Some of the people that I spoke to on island even talked about that it wasn't unusual sometimes to find, because the graves were shallow, to find a bone or something on the surface that had been serviced. There, in fact, were records and there was a map sort of identifying this old African graveyard, so that when they ran the airport access road, they actually planned the road in an area of the valley that they thought would avoid a lot of destruction of a burial ground, if in fact they were going to find anything. And so there was knowledge that there was a burial ground. It wasn't a surprise. As always, even with the city of New York, it was the same thing. The records were there. It's ground truth that you have to find. You have to put your backhoe in or you put your shovels in to see what's there.
You mentioned New York City. Would you mind elaborating on that project?
New York City, I was in the mayor's office of construction. Any buildings that get built in the city of New York have to have what is called an environmental impact statement. So you don't want to build a building on top of a site that may have had radioactive whatever. A document was given to me by an older man who was of German-American descent, had grown up in New York City, a true New Yorker, and he was devastated. He knew my background. He knew I wasn't from New York. He knew my father. I came from a civil rights family. My father represented Martin Luther King. Here I was, a design professional working for the first Black mayor of the city of New York. He brought it to my attention and said, they're going to build a federal building. Over the course of time, I did research. I worked in the mayor's office, and I was pretty instrumental in generating all the memos and doing a lot of inside activism within the mayor's office to get the attention of elected officials, to get people behind the project. It had to be a campaign that folks were from the outside, other political folks, folks from the inside, who would help bring pressure on the federal government to do the right thing. Eventually, I ended up representing the mayor's office, sitting in meetings with the United States General Services Administration, raising the questions, you know, why don't you have Black archaeologists at the table? Why don't you have Black historians if you're going to do any of this archaeology work? And archaeology work, you know, a lot of it's interpretive. Who are the voices? And if the story is going to be told, those voices have to be a part of telling the story. It was an act of Congress that stopped a portion of the building from being built so that what you see now, the area where 300 or 400 remains were reinterred, there was another portion of the building that was meant to be there. Congress told them to reappropriate that money for memorialization and that there would be public arts within the building that would be dedicated to honor the African burial ground. There was a need to do a design competition for a memorial, a design competition for the interpretive center, and I was then asked to step in as the project director for putting together the national and international design competition for the memorial that's there and for the interpretive center. Right before that, Congress required that there be a book of recommendations sent to them from a committee that was appointed by Congress, and I was the executive director for that committee.
And what was the end result?
The outcome was halting construction, preserving a portion of the burial ground for reinterment, coffins that were carved by West African artists, research under Howard University, Dr. Michael Blakey. Leadership, it was important for us to have Black leadership as a way of guiding the project. In the very beginning, there was no Black leadership. And then to have an interpretive center and a memorial.
Were those buried there enslaved people?
Enslaved and free.
How does your work there tie into St. Helena?
This is all connected. It's not talking about one project versus another project. The African burial ground in the city of New York, and I don't know if you understand how big of an impact it had, because as a result of that, that one project was probably the first project that had that level, the huge level of civic engagement surrounding the preservation and the protection of that site. And as a result of that, people all over this country, and now indeed outside of this country, have been inspired and look to the New York African Burial Ground as setting the precedence for preservation of these sites. That's why they would reach out to me to ask, how is it that we can build a memorial? How is it that we preserve these sites? Getting a monument up and getting reburial done and an interpretive center up.
What challenges did you come across?
We don't want white hands on our ancestors' bones. You should not be digging up the remains of our ancestors. You should leave them alone. But there were others who felt that, well, to the extent that some scientific work can be done through DNA or genetics so that we can understand a little bit more about our history, where these people came from, because those questions were also ones that the community wanted answered. In fact, one of the things that my office did was to generate a survey that got sent out publicly asking what it was that they wanted to learn from this site. And that information was provided to all of the scientists, and it was also provided to the designers so that they would be guided by those kinds of responses. So ethically, there were those who felt that not even a monument should sit above the remains of ancestors, that only the sky and the stars and the sun should be there. There were many varied perspectives about that.
How did you address concerns?
Under the leadership of Dr. Michael Blakey at Howard University, community people were invited to come and visit the lab. The lab was decorated, candles burning. They wanted the community to know that the remains were being handled with great respect.
Can you explain how your work preserving burial grounds will help to restore dignity to the victims of the transatlantic slave trade?
First of all, in unearthing some of the, not necessarily the remains, but getting to the top surface of the ground, there are things that archaeologists can learn or be able to convey to the community and help sort of build that picture of who these people were, who the community was, how they were laid to rest. But more than anything else, the burial ground is a tangible reminder. It is a kind of site that everyone in some personal way, whether you are of African descent or not, it is a site that resonates or has significant meaning. It's real. You know that there are people who are lying there and that is unquestionable history that is before you.
Why is it important for the world to know about the island?
St. Helena is unique because of its role in the Middle Passage. It was the provisioning stop. It was the stop where many ships in the slave trade, and then even after the abolition of the slave trade and illegal ships were being caught, and some of them were being brought to St. Helena to unload African people who were enslaved and bring them onto the island, some of whom were very ill, and those that did not survive were buried in this particular ground. This ground was active during that period of Britain's move to abolish the transatlantic trade. Anybody who is a descendant in the United States, in Brazil, Cuba, their ancestors may have stopped there. So to tell that story is a global story. The challenge for any historian is that it's going to have to be a combination of folks who are in Cuba, Brazil, the U.S., to help tell that story. And that's why St. Helena, the position of St. Helena, is so incredibly important. The people of St. Helena, first of all, have been the cultural stewards for this ground. And unfortunately, it has not gotten the respect nor the support that it needs in order for it to thrive in a way that says to the global community that this is an important part of our history that need not ever be forgotten.